everyone, I'm Colin Ellis, best-selling author, award-winning public speaker, and facilitator of global workplace culture change. And in this, the Culture Makers podcast, I get people managers from around the world to share actionable things that you can do too to create a great place to work. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody. It's Colin Ellis here. Welcome to another episode of the Culture Makers podcast. And today I'm delighted, as I always am, to be joined by Christoph van Hout. Now, Christoph started his culture making journey by building his own rugby club, like most people would, I suppose, at the age of 17. As a PE teacher, he saw it as his job to inspire young kids to participate in any sports and enjoy to move. Building a healthy environment around individuals to stimulate behaviour change in order to create vibrant cultures has always been the most important thing for Christoph as a leader, especially as he grew into a master trainer and received a full scholarship in business management for World Rugby. He's had the chance to develop renowned coaches and unions around the world in different sports and is now the technical director of Rugby Netherlands and responsible for systems, structures and people towards a Rugby World Cup and beyond. And he joins me now. Hello, Christoph.
How are you?
Good, thank you. Hi, Colin.
Now, for those of you who can't see this, if you're just listening to it on a podcast, Christoph is sat in a very grand, old-fashioned looking kind of trophy room called the President's Room. And just before we started recording this podcast, we had a little bit of an interesting discussion about kind of the past versus the future. And I know, Christoph, and we'll get into the detail of how you got where you are right now at Rugby Netherlands, but that's part of the what I would call cultural evolution, right? Is you want to make sure that there's a respect for the history of either an organization or a club or a country. But also you want to have that focus on the future as well, right?
Yes, indeed. It's actually, as you could see, what we see in this room is a lot of history, a lot of trophies. But one of the little projects and that really has to happen in the next few months is that we also need to get some future in here. As I referred to, is that... Okay, it's great to look at the history and we should acknowledge the history, but there should also be some future. Where are we going? How are we doing this? So the next step in this room is actually to add some future, some timelines that when I get people in this room, I can also let them believe what I am telling and enjoy the history, but also look forward to the future. So yes, indeed.
Important. Yeah, it's got to provide, I always say that kind of anything that you do with history or kind of a demonstration of where you came from, it's got to really provide fuel for the future. It's got to provide excitement and energy. And particularly if you're bringing new people into a club or an organization. Now, so you're technical director at Rugby Netherlands. My first question before we get how you got to where you are right now is, did you play rugby at school? Belgium is home, right?
Yeah, Belgium is my home. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Whereabouts in Belgium, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm from the north in Belgium, so we speak Dutch.
Okay.
So I lived actually 2 minutes from the border of the Netherlands. So my grandmother's is Dutch, so I do have some Dutch blood in me. So it's quite okay.
I made that transition to Rugby Netherlands easy then.
Quite easy. I had some of it. So.
And did you play rugby at school? Did you have an interest in sports?
I actually started with soccer. Until the age of 17. Yeah. From there on, I had a terrible injury and I had to find a new sport. And at that point, an Irish bar opened inside my little town. I went in into the bar and there was rugby on television. And I said, wow, okay, how can I play this now? As you know, it's not really big in Belgium. So he said, yeah, you will have to drive an hour or so. I said, nah, I'm not going to do that. So I asked the guy behind the bar, maybe we can start a club together. So at the age of 17, I started my own club, rugby club Lommel, where I came from. Yeah. And I went around all the bars with my little book to ask, hey, we're starting a rugby club on Wednesday. Are you coming? And we had around 80 guys and girls on the pitch on Wednesday. And the club still exists now. So sometimes I still come and play with them. So, yeah.
That is incredible. So you decided to play rugby. There wasn't a club, which at that, by the way, an Irish bar put the end to my football dreams, but that's a whole other podcast. And there wasn't a team. So instead of just like losing faith and being like, oh, well, rugby's not for me, I'll just stay in the bar. You were like, well, I'll just start my own club. That is incredible. So Lommel, that's near Eindhoven. Is that right?
Yes.
Kind of on the border. Yeah. I know.
Yeah, good geographics.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. So you established the club there and then did you coach there, Christoph? Were you just playing? How did it all work?
In the beginning, I never played rugby myself, so we had a bit of the luck getting some coaches in that knew rugby. But I learned quite fast and took over the coaching part, and it always has been a bit of a story of my life in terms of if I see something or then I try to make ways to get there. And it was the same with that. And I started coaching quite early because of all the injuries kept happening. And from coaching, it also went well. And had the chance. I was a PE teacher at that point.
Okay.
And did that for 4 or 5 years, something around that. And then I found like, okay, I need to do something else because I really love teaching and I'm sure I will go back to it. I learned a lot as a teacher, as a PE teacher. But I felt I had to move along and get to a new point. And that was with Rugby Flanders at that point and World Rugby as a federation. So
tell me a little bit about the PE teaching, because obviously that's great grounding for becoming a coach in sports. So what kinds of things did you do to encourage participation and get people really thinking, not only about their physical health, but also about their participation, Christoph? What was your approach?
At that point, it was still, as a teacher, I tell and you do. And I didn't really feel really comfortable in that. My goal was not to create the best basketball player because of the best football player or the best, because it was a very, big group of different people. Mm-hmm. And my job was to inspire them to at least do sports after school or to participate. And just to give you an example, you always have some people who don't like sports and sit on the bench. I tried to create environments where they participate. So it could well be to give, go to the young boy there and say, okay, I can't grade you if you don't do anything. So what you do now, you can stand there playing handball, you can stand there. And every time the goalkeeper has the ball, you ask for the ball. Yeah, and at least I see you doing something. So what happens if you change that environment a bit? He will get the ball from the goalkeeper and he needs to participate. And at a given point, he will like it because you can give good feedback. Say, brilliant, well done. Okay, did you like it? And go on from there. So my goal was more to let people enjoy sports, mm-hmm. rather than really make the 8 already a 10. But rather to think, how can everybody be inspired to go home and do sports again or also encourage that?
So what I love there, you talked about changing the environment. So by changing the environment, you're encouraging behavior change in individuals, right? And, that's something that you mentioned. And is that something that you think that it has evolved over time? I always talk about the fact when I started, I suppose, teaching culture, if that's the right way to do it, the right way to say it, is that it was called teamwork. And there was very kind of old fashioned ways of thinking and doing where we told people what to do, which is exactly what you're saying. It's changed, right? It's changed over the last 6, 7, 8 years even to be much more around involve me to help me rather than tell me to change me. Is that something you agree with?
Yes, I definitely agree. And along the way, I saw it changing in every, not only in schools, but also on coaching, on pitches, in management, and all those things. It's like we call it feed forward. Let's put that mirror in front of them and ask the questions. I think if you see like 12 years ago, and now I think the soft skills, I prefer to them soft skills, like problem solving, reflection, self-reflection, some resilience or others are much more important. They became more important along the way, mm-hmm. where we do put people inside an environment where there's maybe a bit of chaos, but it's also our job to take him out by asking the right questions. I firmly believe that someone who've thought about it and solved the problem themselves will learn, mm-hmm. rather than I will tell them. And that's always has been the case since I was a teacher, to try and it sounds wrong, but to push people a bit into an uncomfortable pit, but also knowing where they were. And it was my job to take them out and get them along the pit, because if they leap over it, they wouldn't have learned. So that's always has been a bit of my philosophy in teaching and managing.
And I would really agree with that. I always say that, that self-improvement requires you to feel uncomfortable, not for long periods of time. That's where stress, burnout, anxiety live. Well, you know, 5% of time is if you're just a little bit uncomfortable, and if you're backed by someone, you know, kind of like yourself, who's helping you with that feeling, then that's going to lead to growth, and you're going to be able to achieve what you set out to achieve, right? So you were at Lommel, you were a PE teacher. So then, what was that next leap on the ladder? You know, kind of what was that thing that you wanted to do? That, you know, that what was that progression?
I always knew as a little kid I wanted to go further in sports. I won't call myself a rugby fanatic. I love rugby, but I'm a sports fanatic.
Yeah.
And I wanted to work in sports, and I got a chance to work for the union in Belgium. And at that point, I was also doing my coaching degrees, and I was quite fortunate being invited to the RFU in England, and learned a lot, and had to write something about what we just discussed, if I change the environment, I can stimulate behavioral change also on the pitch. So if you change a square to a circle, they will intend to train differently because they have less space if you get back or forward, or so simple things like that. Or you change a rule inside the game, it will change behaviors on how they will learn. So that worked well. So that got spotted by World Rugby. And I had the chance, and I was quite fortunate that right time, right place, where it was still felt. And this was quite new to travel the world and coaches on this new form of coaching. So that was for me a new experience. So that was my next step in coaching.
So your story, you probably know this or you may not know it, it's not dissimilar to Jose Mourinho. So Jose Mourinho was a PE teacher, went away and studied his coaching badges. And then I think he got his big break. I think he was working in Barcelona with Bobby Robson. But anyway, it's a similar journey. There you go. And look what he's achieved, Christoph. You're just getting started here.
Let's hope.
Yeah. In 5 years, when I interview you again and you're holding, you know, kind of the Rugby World Cup. Anyway, that'll be a different conversation. So that's interesting that you got the sponsorship and the scholarship. That's really great. Do you think there's enough teaching about culture in sport? Because by the sounds of it, you had the initiative to go away and write the paper as part of the work that you were doing within World Rugby or the sponsorship you had. My sense, and you know, I've spoken to a number of people, is we're not teaching people in sport how to build culture. It's still a very much a kind of watch and learn, and either repeat what works and reject what doesn't. Would you say that's your experience?
Yes, I do believe I work in the right sport where culture is quite everything. If you see the All Blacks and all that with rugby. So I think, and I work with different sports, so I do understand what you're saying outside rugby. And rugby, everything starts with culture. That's how the sport is built. It's built on culture. But I do agree, when I go into other sports, as soccer, anything, it's, and I think we have it the whole way, other way around, because if you look at the pyramid of success inside sports like soccer at the moment, you first learn how to win and then you learn all the rest. So that makes it really difficult to build a sustainable culture. If winning is the goal outside the process of making a sustainable culture and make it as process of winning. So
yeah, that's absolutely true. There's this relentless focus. I spoke to a sports team and I said, what's your vision? And it was a particular place in the league ladder. I'm like, no, that's your goal.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's your vision for what you want to become as a club and as a team? And you could see they didn't really understand it. They were like, oh, is it not where we want to finish? I'm like, no, that's the goal. And you know, you need to get there. But you're absolutely right. If you're focusing on kind of the win, you forget the other stuff, and when you don't win, everything else collapses underneath pretty much.
And you can see it in a lot of environments of high performance. It's there's so much pressure on getting results that you tend to go away from your magnetic north, so that you tend to go away from it. And I think you have to be quite conscious on what your magnetic north, as you just say, so what it is and where you are at that point. And if you feel so I have it at home. home, I have it hanging up on my wall, and I put little dots to it to actually understand where we are towards our magnetic north.
Yeah.
And to understand if we need to maybe change a bit back or sit again to see if we are sailing away from it. So it's unbelievable stressful, definitely in sports, and not getting results as a coach because it could well be, let's see, Ajax for this point in the Netherlands.
Yes, that's right.
One of the most successful teams in the world. And now they're standing bottom last, I think. And you see already the second coach this year leaving. And we're only 10, 11 games away in the season. So a lot is depending on results if you can keep your job in this world, which is maybe sadly that we don't look at the process.
Yeah, and I got interviewed, I'm pretty sure it was earlier this year. I was talking about sports, my own sports team's awful. And they've not got a great culture, ironically. And someone saying about managers losing the dressing room. And I said, managers losing the dressing room isn't the issue because they never gained the dressing room to begin with. They never actually brought the dressing room together as one and agreed how we would behave, how we would work together. What does our environment look like? And you mentioned the All Blacks earlier. And one of the things that Graham Henry said was around kind of developing the people so that the team becomes successful and about creating the environment where success happens every day. But if you don't create the environment, then what you end up getting is these peaks and troughs. A peak when you win or get a favorable result, and then a trough when you don't. And all of a sudden, the manager's lost the dressing room when the reality is there was never that connection or togetherness or that sense of belonging to begin with, right?
Yeah, I agree. And for me, it was a bit the same coming into the Netherlands here in this in this role, and you come into a new culture, a new culture as country, but also a new culture with a lot of history and emotions, and trying to understand that. And if you look at it, that as a changing room, trying to see who your stakeholders are, what was the history, and why did that happen. Yeah. But also, I think it's important to, if you acknowledge that and you see it, is to try to understand what the vision, the future is. And to get that, as you say, changing room, to get that together, we need to have a common goal where we all believe in. And if you look at it coming out of a combatant culture, yeah, where everyone is a bit angry on the past, you need to see how you can bring it all together with that vision, with those shared values and beliefs. And you need to, I think the first 6 months was all about listening.
Yeah.
I think it wasn't me telling. And I think that is something that changed, because when I was, I'm still young, but when I was younger, I probably went in and tried to change things, while now I actually took the time to listen and to see what is there and to understand where we were, to then define what is the future and what is success. And from there, try to build, and I always try to use the word sustainable culture, try to build a sustainable culture. I think if you take that history and you don't have to stick in the history because it's really bad, but you have to give it a future, but you need to understand it, and you need to understand who's sitting in front of you. And then I think the behavioral change by changing the environments and doing what you say,
yeah,
can be a brilliant towards the goal or the vision you have. And as you can see now, people want to be part of it. People want to join where we are going. People believe in it. It took a while because they were, there's another guy coming in and he's saying the same things or something. But making people believe, take them on your journey, inspire them. I think the inspiring part is really important.
Yeah.
Can make it a culture where people want to be part of and where people want to belong. And I think that has been the biggest change in the last 2 years. And you can see the changing room has now changed because people are now taking accountability. And same for me. I will be the first one to raise my hand. But that accountability is part of a sustainable culture. So it feels more like where I was fighting the first year, now I'm actually working together, working along and enjoying my time in the changing room.
Which is good.
Yeah. I'm never in a changing room, by the way. I'm always in an office. But,
yeah, any players listening to that will be like, we never see him in the training room. But I loved what you said there. And that's it's a great lesson for anybody listening, is that you said that you listened to, I'm paraphrasing you here, but you said you listened to understand, not to respond. And I think that we've still got a way to go with that at the minute, kind of globally, as people are still listening to respond. They're not thinking. And, you know, this is the heart of empathy and the heart of connection between humans is, what is this person saying? How are they saying it? And what's a suitable response here? And sometimes the right response is just to let people talk. It's not to try and fix them. It's not to try and solve their problem. It's just to say, I hear you. Thank you for sharing, right? And at that point, people, they feel cared for. And I spoke to a guy, an older guy, a senior leader. He's like, oh, why do people want to feel cared for in cultures these days? I'm like, they always wanted it. It was just never a priority, but it is now, right?
Yeah, it's true. And I think you hit the nail on the head there with the word caring. That's something that we as a team said, and it's the most difficult thing, but also the best thing is time. And I always say time doesn't mean we don't have time. It means we need to make time for each other.
Yeah.
We need to care for each other and take that time to listen to each other. Because at a given time, when you lose that, and like, again, in a high performance culture where you're always focused on the next thing, on the next thing, on the next thing, it's also very important to listen to each other, but also celebrate successes to each other, as small as they always be. And that's a really, really difficult part when you're in a high performance culture, because like say, and you have to see, we just talked about Mourinho, it must be really hard for him because you just won your game and you lost your game, you're going for the mic and they're only asking, what are you going to do next week? Or what are you going to change towards next week? So you don't have the time to live in the now. You always look at the future. And I think it's very important what I also say, listen to each other, but also celebrate successes together. Make that time to listen and celebrate together what you just achieved, or maybe what you didn't achieve, and also talk about that. And you can also celebrate that, because you can make mistakes. It's okay to fail, as we all know, but you can also celebrate that you learn from it. So we try to take time. In the Netherlands, they have vrijdag borrels, so Friday drinks.
Yeah.
And we try to do it there. And we really keep to it that we celebrate there together. Why are we having this drink together? So
that's fantastic. Because culture lives in those small moments, right? I call them micro experiences, Christoph. Yeah. It's the little things that we do. And that comes through saying, like when you see your teammates saying, good morning, how are you? How was your weekend? How's your son, daughter, family? All of these little things, but also in celebrating success and recognizing sometimes courage, resilience, the way people communicate, you know, being grateful for the fact that you're surrounded by people who want the best for you. That's where culture lives, right? In those little moments.
I remember being coaching, that's already 16 years ago, and I tried to understand it was under 16, so really young kids. And in the year they now they're gonna be angry, but I kept a little book of each player.
Yeah.
And wrote down if they said something interesting, because I couldn't remember it from 50 kids. So now we have to think about, and this is parents are really important in that part, and to create that culture also, because then you also need to belong when you're with young kids. And every time you need to think, after a game, they wanted to speak about rugby, but I actually looked at my book before and I said, okay. And then they started about, I said, oh no, how did he do it with the judo? Oh, I heard his grades were great and all that. And what we created that year was unbelievable. There's still parents when I see them talking about that year, because we went from almost having no supporters to having 150 people there to drive our kids to the away game, because they wanted to belong, because they felt cared for. And the same for the kids, and still did it a few years ago and now we will be really angry, but no, I wrote down when I coached seniors rugby that they had three kids and I knew what the kids were doing. And instead of telling him about that when I walked next to him, just asking, hey, how's your kid doing at his practice there? Or how was his grades? And saying the name. And you could see their body language change, their posture change. And I think, those little things, as you say, that caring and showing that, encouraging that is enormous.
You know, often, you know, when I run culture sessions with teams where we define the conditions and the culture that we want, I always start with a little exercise, is what's one thing that the person next to you doesn't know about you? Sometimes that's the most impactful kind of part of that day is all of a sudden people are like, I had no idea. I had no idea that you were this. I had no idea that family. We forget sometimes that, you know, we're just human beings trying to do our best in the world. And actually, it helps if we're surrounded by people who are also want that for themselves and that we want that collectively for a team. So I've got to, I know I'll have to let you go. You're starting your day there, Christoph. So I've got a question, right, in terms of...
Yes.
You know, from what I've read, you've already had some really good success already with the team. So what's the plan? What does success look like for Rugby Netherlands?
I think creating a sustainable culture and processes towards reaching a World Cup.
Yeah.
We can reach a World Cup, but then go down again. I wouldn't be happy. So it's leaving that legacy here that after I leave, it can be sustainable.
Yeah.
I think that success for Netherlands is in a sustainable way in everything. So finances, processes, systems, structures, reaching a World Cup and beyond. I think the and beyond is a very nice addition as a word. So and beyond.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Christoph, I have no doubts that you'll expend every little bit of energy and use all of your emotional intelligence to do just that. And I want to wish you every success. And thank you so much for joining me on the Culture Makers podcast today.
No problem. Thank you, Colin.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, please share the link with your colleagues and friends or with your connections on social media. If you'd like to find out more about the work that I do, head to www.colindellis.com or find me on LinkedIn.